President Trump touted the economy in his tax cuts Tuesday night. He declared it a new American moment. The U.S. is experiencing robust economic growth. After a kind of sluggish start last year, the economy grew by 3.2% and 2.6% in the past two quarters. Why is this? What policies are contributing to economic growth and low unemployment? We're getting economic takeaways from this speech and analysis on the broader health of the economy this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Trevon Logan is a professor and chairperson of economics at The Ohio State University and a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. By the way, he was also an undergrad at UW-Madison, and he vacations in the Dells. Trevon, welcome back to Wisconsin via the radio.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Well, President Trump said in his State of the Union speech that there has never been a better time to start living the American dream. Let's take a listen.
No matter where you've been or where you've come from, this is your time. If you work hard, if you believe in yourself, if you believe in America, then you can dream anything. You can be anything. And together, we can achieve absolutely anything.
It sounds boundless. Are economic times really that good right now?
Well, there are a lot of interesting aspects to the economy right now. I think there are certainly some excellent macroeconomic indicators. As you mentioned, growth is accelerating. Economic growth is accelerating. Unemployment is low. Inflation is also low. And all of those bode well for the macroeconomic picture. There are also some troubling indicators as well. We see growing wealth inequality, income inequality, and generational mobility in terms of intergenerational mobility of income is highly geographically variable and appears that we're not necessarily lifting as many people out of poverty between generations as we may have been able to in the past.
The president spent a good 10 minutes or so of his speech touting economic successes that he said have occurred under his watch, including creation of new jobs, low unemployment, and a rising stock market. Did these things happen because of the Trump administration policies, or were they well on their way before he took the oath of office?
I think that's always an interesting question, and there is a moment in which any presidential administration owns the economy. But certainly, in the very beginning of any administration, it's an economy that they inherit. And that's for really structural reasons. There's very little room to implement a lot of policy, and then very little that can happen, even if policies are changed, before they take effect. So if you consider, say, the recent tax changes, those now take effect in 2018, although it passed at the end of the first, towards the end of the first year of his term. Those are now just taking effect. So we probably will not see the long-term effects for some time. But what can change instantaneously in an economy, say, is consumer sentiment, prospects, and expectations about the future, which can certainly have an immediate impact.
You economists love to look at those lagging indicators, too, to get a real good sense, I suppose, of where things sit.
Yeah, and lagging indicators are very good. But one question is how lagging an indicator actually is. So you usually like to look, if you're thinking about, say, timing a business cycle in terms of when an economy is expanding, when an economy is retracting or in recession, these are always decided after the fact. So when we know an economy is in recession, the economy is actively in recession at the time that we've decided. So when we think about expansion, it's the same way. The economy is actually recovered. We know that we're in a recovery right now. The question is how long that recovery will be. And then the counterfactual of, are we actually recovering faster than we would have expected or slower than we would have expected, given these policy changes.
Going back to the disparities economists are seeing between the rich and poor and the greater challenges for upward mobility, President Trump used Tuesday night to sing the praises about the tax cuts he signed into law late last year. He noted the doubling of the standard deduction, the lowering of the corporate tax rate, and said millions of families will have more take-home pay starting this month. He also mentioned that 3 million workers have gotten tax cut bonuses for the average American. Is there anything about these tax cuts they wouldn't like? And how do you see these tax cuts, this tax reform package, if you will, making America more divided among classes?
That's a very complicated question. So let me try to decompose it a little bit. There are certainly some aspects of the tax policy that would be good for consumers in the sense of lowering their tax burden, which we would believe would have effects on consumption and subsequent economic growth. Lowering corporate tax rates, the effects are not necessarily so clear as direct sort of tax cuts to consumers. So when you think about tax policy, for the government's perspective, revenue can come and the reductions in revenue can come from any source that you might think about. But economists are always looking at the sources of where you're actually enacting tax reform, which might have larger or smaller expected effects on the economy. So the debate among economists about this recent tax package is that it is primarily tilted towards corporate tax cuts as opposed to tax cuts for marginal tax rates for consumers and households, and that has different expected effects on the macroeconomy. Also, those tax cuts for corporations are permanent, whereas the ones for consumers are not, and the ones for consumers are relatively smaller. There are other aspects that could be made better for consumers, particularly those at the lower ends of the income distribution, expansion of the earned income tax credit and other sorts of policies that were not as aggressively pursued in this tax package.
Trevon Logan is with us. He's a professor and chairperson of economics at The Ohio State University, a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. We're taking a broader look at the economy right now, taking a deeper look at the takeaways from the State of the Union speech and the president's remarks on the economy. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What signs do you see of a robust economy? Are your personal financial circumstances improving? What do you make of the market gains? Is the economy leaving you behind? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Trevon, the president mentioned that unemployment claims have hit a 45-year low. He also said that African-American unemployment is at its lowest level ever recorded. There's been a whole lot of fact-checking since the speech Tuesday night, and looking deeper at this claim that black unemployment fell during the Obama administration from 16.8% to 7.8%. Under Trump, it went from 7.8% to 6.8%. So is there an overstatement here of the Trump administration's influence?
Well, typical of an economist, I'm going to speak of both hands, yes and no. On the one hand, it is true that the rate of unemployment, the unemployment rate, is at the lowest level that we've observed for African Americans. But the second is the trajectory or the rate of change in the unemployment rate has not been as aggressive as it was under the Obama administration. And when we think about the last time the unemployment rate was this low, it was in the Clinton administration, comparable to Trump's numbers, and that was also a period of extended economic progress. So by the time these unemployment numbers look as they do now, this has been over a much longer period of economic growth, and the problem for the Trump administration is if you start looking at that trajectory of when the economy began to recover, that of course was taking place before he was inaugurated.
The day after the president won the election, the Dow closed at 18,600. Yesterday, it closed at 26,150. The president said during his speech that the rising stock market is great news for Americans' 401ks, retirement, pension, college savings accounts. How significant a measure are the markets to the health of the broader economy?
That's debated by economists. I do believe that one of the great aspects of the market is, and the stock market in particular, is it can capture contemporaneous effects and particularly sentiment about prospects for the future. So if expectations are changing about prospects for the future, we might see that immediately reflected in stock market gains, and other indicators may lag. One of the issues, though, going back to this point about inequality, is a lot of Americans who do own stocks, and the majority of Americans who do own stocks, own them in relatively passive investment vehicles where they can realize these gains, but they're not actively realizing them right now, for example, in their pocketbooks, where it would have a direct effect, say, on consumption. And second, a lot of households don't own any stock at all.
Gallup survey said 50% of households don't own stock. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. So half of the households aren't receiving any of the benefits of this gain. And if you think about households who are saving them in non-retirement accounts, that's going to be an even smaller fraction of the total population.
I'm going to pause right here as we discuss the economy with Trevon Logan, a professor and chairperson of economics at The Ohio State University. Getting your reaction to the economy as well at 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return after a news update. Economic growth means certain things, and there isn't a clear-cut road to get there. We have this confluence of things going on, like increasing production, increasing consumption, increasing employment, and increasing activity in areas like construction and transportation. President Trump's strength at the moment is an economy that seems to be humming right along, and the possibility that it will grow stronger in the next year. We're digging into the numbers, the lagging indicators, making sense of the economy in this hour of the morning show. Trevon Logan is our guide. He's a professor and chairperson of economics at The Ohio State University. He's a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Gathering insights from you on your economic situation at 800-642-1234. What did you think of the president taking credit for a robust economy? Are you feeling the positive effects in your home? How does the president's words on the economy hit home for you? Call in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Jim, who joins us in Janesville. Hi, Jim.
Hi. This tax reform, so-called, it was pushed through by Republicans only, and it benefits the wealthiest, and it does not really help the middle income and the poor. It makes it, you have to work like two jobs just to make ends meet. It takes away states like Wisconsin where you can deduct your income on the state. So what it's doing is benefiting the richest and it's forcing the regular person to work at least two jobs just to get by.
Jim, thank you so much for calling in and sharing the effect of the tax overhaul in your home. Trevon, what do you make of this?
I think that's a sentiment that we hear a lot from people. There are really some conflicting aspects of the tax policy. So it does lower marginal tax rates and it does raise the standard deduction, but for some households in states, for example, that have higher state tax rates, they can no longer deduct those from their income tax returns, and so their net effective tax rates actually might go up. And this would be more likely among households at the lower end of the income distribution than those who are at the higher end of the income distribution would be less of a marginal effect there. So these are the sorts of things that we were talking about earlier when we talked about stock market gains not being necessarily equally shared in the economy. And there's also the question of how this tax policy rolled out. So we know the size of the tax cuts, but it is their distribution that I think a lot of consumers are wary about and are really looking to see what these effects will have on their own pocketbooks. And this might have some political effects in the near future.
Yeah. Do we even know you know, do economists even know how these tax cuts, how this tax policy, as it kicks in, what it could really do? I mean, do we have a clear knowledge of what will come about from it?
You know, this is very debated because one of the chief drivers in the tax bill is the cut in corporate tax rates. And one of the things that's debated, particularly among public finance economists, is how you actually structure those incentives in, say, corporate tax rate policy. So say you had a policy, for example, that encouraged or incentivized equipment investment by corporations. That would be a very specific sort of tax policy, but it might have a desired effect for the macroeconomy, right? If corporations are investing in equipment, that gives demand for manufacturing, and so that could have really positive effects overall for the economy. It's less clear if you're cutting tax rates overall whether or not those would have the desired effects on, say, spurring investment or leading to increases in manufacturing, leading to human capital investment, for example, among firms. And so one of the fears for this current tax policy is these cut in corporate tax rates will simply lead to buybacks of stock, which would lead to this boom in the stock market, but not necessarily have real material effects on the living standards of the majority of a household.
On this conversation on the economy, let's go to Gary now in Brookfield. Hi, Gary.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. The thing I wanted to bring up is, and the professor just mentioned it again, the doubling of the standard deduction for married filing jointly. But he doesn't mention the fact that they've eliminated the personal exemption in 2018. In 2017, the personal exemption was $4,050 an individual. So for a couple, that's $8,100. That almost offsets the $12,000 increase in the standard deduction. For a family of four, the elimination of the personal exemption more than offsets that $12,000 increase.
Gary, thanks for that observation. Trevon?
Yeah, this is where the rubber meets the road with this tax policy is we know the size of the overall bill, and what is happening is there is the increase in the standard deduction. But the question is, and I think this caller is right to raise this point, that this is, in some ways, for a lot of households, a trading of one for the other and an elimination of other deductions that they can no longer claim on their taxes. So while their paychecks during the year beginning, you know, this month, may see an increase as human resource departments recalculate expected benefits, when they actually file at the end of the year, there will be the expected change in whether or not that refund will be as large as they had expected, and the refund that they'll receive this spring will be as large in the spring of 2019 is unknown for some households, and it depends on what state they're living in, what their standard deduction would have been in the old system versus the new system, and their ability to deduct certain types of expenses in the past that they are no longer allowed to deduct today.
Let's shift to the health of companies. Lynn on Facebook writes that she's seeing a whole lot of paper mill jobs evaporate. And on that note, Kimberly Clark announced this week that it will close two Wisconsin plants, and that will result in the loss of 600 jobs. Trevon, companies that produce paper products have struggled in recent years. Other companies are, it seems, shedding workers, like Kimberly Clark, a very large corporation. Is there anything the Trump administration could do to reverse this trend? And what are we seeing here with job losses?
Yeah, I think this is one of the interesting aspects of the economy. Unemployment can mask a lot of things. Low unemployment doesn't necessarily mean that wages are growing, and it doesn't mean that there are increases in what we would call job quality over time. In the case of Kimberly Clark, and this is very close to my heart as a Badger, many of my friends in engineering went to work at Kimberly Clark, and that's certainly a large employer in the state. Kimberly Clark's paper products are not necessarily matched right now to what is going on in the market, which are, say, cardboard products with the growth of online distribution and particularly with increases in logistics. And so there could be tax policies created that would help firms in a particular industry retool for contemporary demand. And so when I talked about equipment investment, having large-scale tax incentives for corporations like Kimberly-Clark to retool their existing manufacturing establishments could really actually save jobs in an area in Wisconsin where now they don't have that necessarily that ability, and it might make economic sense for them to actually close the plant instead of retooling it to meet demand for other ranges of products.
With these incentives, are we propping up artificially, whether it is companies or the economy as a whole, and could that lead to perhaps a real shell shock?
That is unknown, and I think most economists would hazard a belief that the market is doing really well. There are certainly headwinds, and I think one of the aspects that people have not talked about is this dramatic cut in revenue for the federal government has implications for interest rates into the future, and very low unemployment has implications potentially for inflation in the future as well. One of the things that was recently released is that the Congressional Budget Office has encouraged Congress to increase the debt ceiling sooner than they had expected because of the sharp declines in revenue that are expected to hit federal coffers this year. And that, of course, will mean that servicing the debt will cost more for the federal government, and that will put pressure on interest rates to go up. At a period of very low unemployment, that also puts pressure potentially on inflation in the economy, and you could have a double whammy for economic growth in terms of high interest rates and high inflation.
Let's go to Steve now, who joins us from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. I have a question for your guest about the capping of the state and local tax deduction at $10,000. And I'd like to know from an economist's point of view, is more money going to be lost there that could be spent in a consumer economy than is going to be made up by doubling the standard deduction? In other words, will there be a net loss to spending in the economy, and will it have a negative impact? And particularly, what do you think will be the impact on the housing market?
Great question, Steve. Trevon.
This is a great question for the housing market, and you'll note that the American Association of Realtors was strongly against the elimination of this deduction. What it may do, and probably the best, one of the best examples that we would have is, say, a state like California. And in California, the property taxes on a house don't change unless the house is actually sold, to a first approximation. And what happens is households actually stay in their homes for a very long period of time because of that, because moving to a new home becomes much more expensive, both in terms of housing prices rising, but also for tax implications. When you cap the benefit at $10,000, that has a particularly large effect in places where the housing market is quite robust and houses are more expensive, and it also would have an effect in states that have relatively higher tax rates. And so those effects on mobility could be actually substantially negative. Now, to the question of the distributional effects, will it have a net negative effect? Will it actually take money out of people's pockets as opposed to either leaving them neutral or putting more money in their pockets? It really depends where in the income distribution you are and whether or not you were an itemizer to begin with or not. But certainly those who are in places that have high property taxes and in states that have high state taxes, this could lead to a net negative in terms of their own individual economic situation.
Trevon Logan is with us. He's a professor and chairperson of economics at The Ohio State University, research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. We're exploring what's behind the economic growth, getting takeaways on the topic of the economy from Tuesday's State of the Union address, incorporating your questions as well at 800-642-1234. How do you think the economy is doing? Is it as rosy as the president described in your household? Should the president take credit for a strong economy? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Trevon, let's step back and look at the world, first world countries as a whole, and compare a bit where U.S. stands in economic growth compared to other developed nations. In Davos last week at the World Economic Summit, President Trump was touting the America's growth and the stock market. But if you look at markets around the globe, international stock markets are doing even better.
Yeah, and I think that that is one of the most interesting questions is American competitiveness going forward. One of the largest reasons that people believe that we needed to have this particular form of tax cuts in terms of particularly lowering corporate tax rates was to keep, for example, corporations and jobs here in the United States instead of moving to foreign territory. And whether that would have an effect on that it is unclear right now. We don't see necessarily a large exodus of American business to foreign countries, but we also have not seen necessarily a huge influx. But we wouldn't expect that to happen so immediately after the passage of the Tax Act.
Where does President Trump's Trans-Pacific Partnership stand in terms of his approach to it and NAFTA? He called it terrible deals in Davos. We're already out of the TPP, and it's looking like we may be out of NAFTA unless some serious changes are made. What kind of effects is Trump's position on trade having on our economy, and what implications, then, would it have on the world?
You know, trade and international trade is always one of the most fraught issues, not because economists have a lot of disagreements about them, but this actually takes place in a political economy. When we think about trade, we know as economists that there are substantial gains to trade. So if I were to say in the profession overall, economists are sort of almost uniformly for free trade agreements because we believe that trade lowers the prices of goods for consumers and actually increases consumer welfare. Now, there certainly are some negative implications from that, and one of them is that there could be losers, right? So if you're in an industry, for example, that faces a substantial amount of import competition, which would be international competition, there may be job losses in that sector, but that might also just mean a shifting to other sectors of the economy where the United States is more competitive, say, for export. And that's a function of a lot of things. We've seen this, for example, in the automobile industry, where there were substantial losses, but now we see foreign manufacturers of automobiles importing and actually now building their automobiles in the United States because we have a competitive advantage in terms of highly educated workers, a sufficient land. There are some tax incentives involved, but we have a very productive workforce. So part of this is about competitiveness, but I think that we don't talk about, we talk a lot about the losses, and the potential loss of firms, say, to Mexico or other sorts of countries where we have free trade agreements, but we don't talk about the jobs that are created because we have those free trade agreements and we have comparative advantage.
You bring up the automobile industry, and there's also then all of the feeding, the companies that feed into the smaller parts makers that feed into that automobile manufacturing plant. NAFTA implications there as well, I suppose.
Yes. Certainly. When we think about these large industries like auto manufacturing, and this goes all the way back to the bailout for the auto industry, that's a very large source of manufacturing employment, not just for the main automakers, U.S. automakers themselves, but for the firms that service those automakers. And if we would not have had, say, that bailout, which turned out to be successful, we would have had substantial job losses in manufacturing, particularly in states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, in the Northwest.
The cumulative effects of economic growth has pushed the unemployment rate down to 4.1%. That's a 17-year low there, which means that wages may increase in the coming year as employers compete for scarcer workers. We're understanding what's behind this economic growth and getting takeaways on the topic of the economy from Tuesday night's State of the Union. Trevon Logan is with us as our guide. He's a professor and chairperson of economics at the Ohio State University. He's a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. How do you measure the economy in your home, in your household? How is it doing? Is it as a rosy of a depiction as the president described? Should President Trump be taking credit for a strong economy? Is it strong for you? 800-642-1234. Share your story. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return after a news update on the Ideas Network. A poll conducted in mid-January by ABC News and The Washington Post found 58% of respondents said the economy was in good or excellent shape. That's the most in 17 years. Yet just 38% credited President Trump, while 50% said President Obama deserved a great deal or good amount of credit. During the State of the Union, President Trump hammered home the notion that the economy shows his success in office. What were your thoughts in hearing his remarks on the economy? Does the booming economy reflect your circumstances? Should the president take credit? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Trevon Logan is with us for this analysis. He's a professor and chairperson of economics at The Ohio State University and a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Let's go to Beverly now, who joins us from Bayfield. Hi, Beverly.
Yes, I'm a senior, and more is being taken out of my Social Security, so I'm getting less, and more is being taken for the out of the Medicare, so I'm also paying more in for my medical care.
Beverly, so you're seeing changes to what you have to live on.
Oh, considerably.
Yeah. Trevon, what about these programs, what we've been called the entitlement programs?
That is a great point that Beverly is raising, because when we're touting, say, a tax package or other sorts of incentives, say, for corporations, we're forgetting that we have a very large share of the population that is in retirement. They have Social Security and pension benefits, and our changes to those programs have a very real material effect on their living standards and the overall economy. Less money in Beverly's pockets, either due to cuts, say, in Medicare, increases in premiums, for example, for medical care, increases in premiums for prescription drug benefits, et cetera, give her less money to spend, and that actually is less money than that's flowing and circulating in the economy. And we don't talk about that in terms of policy, but entitlement reform has huge implications for the economy overall in terms of living standards.
Beverly, thanks for the call. Let's go to Gary now, who joins us in Iron River. Hi, Gary.
Yes, good morning. Say, early on in the program, Professor Logan said that in higher tax states, the upper-income people are helped rather than hurt by the new tax plan, and I believe that's factually wrong. In a state like Wisconsin, which isn't amongst the highest but still has relatively high top income tax rate and property tax rates, that loss of state tax deductions, the loss of investment advisory fee deductions, the loss of a variety of other deductions is not compensated by the reduction in rates and the increase in standard deduction. The taxes paid will indeed go up under the Trump tax plan.
Gary, thank you for calling in. Trevon.
Yes, that is correct. Gary is correct. And what I meant to say is, for those who are very high income, they tend to have higher capital gains and other aspects of the tax plan that are not related to state taxes or, in fact, related to local property taxes that they can still use to, in fact, lower their overall net tax bill. Another large change that isn't mentioned here is changes to the alternative minimum tax, which certainly has an effect on very high-earning individuals, high-income individuals, that also could lead to a net benefit, even if they're in a state where they can no longer deduct their state income taxes.
Trevon, you were interviewed as part of a PBS NewsHour story last month about how much credit the president deserves for economic successes, and you said you were very uncertain about what would happen with the economy. Where is this unease coming from?
I think the biggest question for economists is, will there be entitlement reform? As I mentioned, that would have changes for the economy overall. And second, the infrastructure plan that certainly President Trump touted during the election and has still not been unveiled could have very large impacts on the economy. So a lot of the story in terms of President Trump's economic policy has yet to be written, and we don't know how active of a role his administration will play as opposed to Congress playing in the construction of those sorts of policies. And that's really the largest source of uncertainty on my end.
Let's go to Kelly now, who joins us from Cascade. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I definitely agree with the polls. I feel like our economy is doing well right now, but I'm concerned that it was built on a strong foundation that's been occurring over the past 8 years, and now Trump is coming in and wildly changing everything around, and I'm just have this kind of gloom and doom feeling about what's to come, but I'm putting that aside just to go on about living. I feel like personally it's not going to change things a whole lot for me, except that all of the programs that I care about deeply related to the environment, education, funding for things like healthcare, those are things that I feel deeply passionate about, and I think that those are all taking a huge hit, as well as infrastructure and things that are just, make our country good in so many other ways that lower taxes, I don't know, that just doesn't feel like it's the right direction.
Kelly, thank you for those observations. Kelly says, you know, the president is changing everything around. Trevon, Kelly has that perception. Is it true that a lot is being changed under the Trump administration? And Kelly is concerned that it's not in the direction of the things that she cares about, like the environment.
Yeah, so far there have been largely two changes. The first would be that the Tax Act. The second are regulatory changes that the Trump administration has rolled out in a more administrative process and something that doesn't require congressional approval. And the other large things we were talking about earlier have yet to be rolled out. And so how much these changes have had on the economy, on the real economy, is unknown, and I think they probably have been reasonably small. There are other changes, though, that are on the horizon. So Janet Yellen will no longer be the chair of the Federal Reserve, and she's been a very successful chair of the Federal Reserve, has overseen a period of expanding economic growth and low unemployment and also low inflation. And so changes in the leadership of monetary policymakers could have very large effects on the economy. That affects investor sentiment. Yellen was very good, for example, at managing expectations for the economy and steadying the ship, and her successor will do the same is unknown at this point. So there are a lot of unknowns in the next, say, I would say 16 to 18 months.
And some of these unknowns is perhaps what is making Kelly a bit uneasy?
Yes, I think if you look at consumer sentiment, there are a lot of prospects that the economy is doing really well right now, but that they're not sure of how well the economy will do, say, in 2, 3, or 4 years. And so that might have an effect on long-term, say, purchases of consumer durables, which would then have really large effects on the economy. So what you'd like to have any economist to tell you is the less uncertainty, the better. And I think the more transparent we can be in our economic policy and the more forthcoming we can be about policy design will give people a lot of confidence in economic prospects for the future. For example, when the Tax Act was being passed, there were a lot of things that were bandied about and policies that were being developed. And so there was a lot of uncertainty about what it would actually look like that Congress would pass. And so if people have a better idea of what is coming in the economy, they're better able to deal with it, adjust for it, and manage their expectations of it.
Trevon Logan, let us close this conversation, if you will, with this notion of trickle-down economics. And let's go to Vincent in Milwaukee, who can open the question. Vincent, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I would, first of all, say that the man who's presently in the Oval Office is a pathological liar, so anything he virtually would say I would question. But if we look back at Bush 1, President Bush 1, he was the one, of course, who coined the phrase voodoo economics, the idea that as the more tax breaks you give to the wealthy, the better everyone is because of trickle-down economics. And he obviously, as I said, coined the phrase, this was voodoo economics. And I'm just wondering, is this just one more example, that is this tax, the taxes that have been now passed, it's just another example that it's not going to work for anyone except for the very top, and that no one else ultimately is going to benefit from it.
Trevon, go ahead.
Yeah, that is certainly the sentiment that a lot of people have about the way that this tax cut was extended. One of the key issues here is that this had a little bit less to play on the individual end, say focusing on what the Reagan tax cuts did, as opposed to the corporate end, which it happens in this case. And so it not only has an effect on some of the people in the wealth distribution, but it has a disproportionate effect on those who are in one particular side of the wealth distribution at the very highest end and who have interests that are tied more to large corporations who would enjoy the largest benefits of this tax plan. And so it has a little bit of the less of trickle-down economics at its core as really a belief that sort of corporate tax cuts will lead to large gains in employment and wages and economic growth. So it has less to do with, say, cutting high marginal tax rates on wealthier individuals as opposed to cutting taxes on corporations. So it's a bit of a twist, I think, on the trickle-down economics that we saw practiced, say, in the 1980s and early 1990s.
Are we leaning too heavily on this trickle-down theory actually playing out like we anticipate that it will work? Are we leaning too heavily on this theory?
I think there's a question of leaning too heavily on the theory, and then the question is how you actually design policy to align with what you'd like to happen. As I mentioned earlier, there are ways to design corporate tax policies that encourage corporations to do the things that you would like to do by incentivizing them to do so. So if you want corporations to create jobs, you could provide, for example, tax incentives for job creation directly, as opposed to cutting corporate tax rates overall and hoping that jobs materialize as a result of those cuts.
Well, Trevon Logan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Trevon Logan is a professor and chairperson of economics at The Ohio State University. He is a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Joined us there to talk about the state of the economy and the president's remarks on it during Tuesday night's State of the Union. This hour of the morning show was produced by Bill Martins and Chris Molina. Michelle Johnson is our executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation on the economy, you hear it on the Ideas Network. You can carry over this conversation to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Thanks for listening.